Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 493, coming at you to blow your eardrums with my loud, loud voice. So, oh my goodness. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, I saw your face when I said my hey. I'm like, ooh, that red line, didn't it? So we'll fix it in post, right?
Yeah, always. It always works.
Yeah, I'll just shout at everybody at the beginning of every episode. It's bound to work. Claire, so what are you working on fiction-wise? Because we haven't talked about that in a while.
That's true. I guess when this airs, I have just published a new paranormal cozy mystery and a new series. It's a spinoff, an old series. So that, and then in October, maybe pushing it back to November, if I'm going to be real with myself, is the next Alice Luck Space Adventures book. So I have two Ooh. Coming out. And I think that might be it for the year. I think I might publish those two. And just call it as far as fiction goes.
Dude, there is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we're getting into November and it's not a good time to launch around Thanksgiving. You know, I've never had as much success with that. I might do a cozy mystery around then just because the readers are going to go through that no matter what. It's not a huge launch thing. And then I take all of December off. So, you know, that's nothing happened until January at that point. So we'll see. But yeah, thanks for asking about the fiction. I do also write fiction books.
You've written a lot of them. You're very prolific. Yes. And so I thought, hey, let's see how that's going.
Yeah, switching it up on me. Oh my gosh. Engaging parts of myself that I haven't been witnessing in the sphere.
Yeah. I don't know what I was doing on the video. Some kind of Vogue thing with one hand. I don't know.
Karate chop Vogue? I don't
know. Karate chop Vogue. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. I miss the fiction. I don't see myself coming back to it anytime soon, but I've really enjoyed putting the fiction-y story within my nonfiction. I get a lot of comments saying that, oh, this isn't dry like normal nonfiction books. And I'm like, yeah, that was the idea. Let's keep it interesting. And unfortunately, I don't know if I have any books in me the rest of this year, but it's all good.
It happens.
It's all good.
It happens. You get to start fresh whenever you want.
Whenever I want. Let's get into the question of the week from a previous week. If you could change one thing about the current state of indie publishing, what would it be and why? Dharma Kelleher said that Amazon would get rid of their exclusivity requirement for KU, a common refrain I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Cody C. Engdahl said, honestly, I wouldn't change a thing. We live in a golden age of independent creators. We no longer have to beg the gatekeepers to be heard. If you're willing to put in the work, you can put your work out there and let the free market decide its worth. Not everyone is going to make it, but at least you can try.
It's really positive by Cody. I like that. He chose not to answer. He abstained, but in a positive way. And Sarah Howley said, the ridiculously low royalties from distributors, we deserve more for our effort. Very nice there, Sarah. You can answer the questions of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com or in the comment section for the post on the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. Claire, we have kind of a philosophical discussion here today. Are you ready for the top story?
I'm always ready for philosophy, Brian. Oh, good, I love it. Good. Let's do it. Let's dive in.
Yes. Top story is updating art. Quote, when a piece of art is finished, it's done, says Wes Anderson in an interview with The Guardian's Nadia Khatami. The film director weighed in on the recent controversy over publishers and estates' decisions to touch up or modify published books to remove offensive language or topics. Anderson, who's adapting some of the work of author Roald Dahl for Netflix, was asked about the decision of the publisher to edit out language that's offensive by today's standards. Quote, I'm probably the worst person to ask about this because if you ask me if Renoir, I'm not French, should be allowed to touch up one of his pictures, I would say no, it's done. End quote. Earlier this year, it was discovered that Puffin Books had made hundreds of changes to Dahl's original texts, including such books as James and the Giant Peach, Matilda, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Quote, Puffin Books said the changes were made so the books could continue to be enjoyed by all today, said Komami. But many people, including Anderson, believe that authors and artists should leave it alone once it's published. Quote, and certainly, he added, no one who is not an author should be modifying somebody's work, somebody's book, he's dead, end quote. Others argue that it's simply commercially savvy to update the books rather than let them be avoided by modern day parents and teachers. Quote, the industry is simply updating classics to appeal to millennial parents, says Gabby Hinsliff of The Guardian. The main problem seems to be the quality of the updated prose, end quote. Claire, it's 80 years in the future. You have unfortunately passed at this time.
I hope so.
But you have, you know, the rights of your books passed to your estate, and your estate decides we are going to update the Jessica Christ books to fit with modern sensibilities.
They will certainly need that, yes.
How would you feel about that?
I wouldn't feel much, Brian, because I'd be dead.
How would your spirit feel?
It wouldn't have the impulse to haunt, for what that's worth. Yeah, I mean, this is one of those issues where there are two valid sides of the argument. What? So I think it's interesting, right? Sometimes there's issues where there's like one sort of logical way to think about it, sound arguments, and then the quote unquote other side is just like bonkers, right? Well, there's two sides to this. So sometimes there's not two sides to this, but I think that this issue does have two very sound sides.
Right.
And we actually already have a solution for this.
Okay.
Built into publishing, which is called new editions. So I think that that is a really good way to, you know, kind of split the difference here. We can have the old version and then we can have the new version and consumers can decide which one they want, you know?
Yeah, I mean, books have been abridged in one way or another for many, many years. This doesn't seem all that different from that. I do think that the point made by Hinsliff here of the prose, the changes needing to be quality, that can be difficult, right? I mean, I have an English degree, and we of course like go through lots of books that have been translated into English, and they are translated by a translator who has put their own spin on these books normally. And that has been going on for hundreds and thousands of years of older texts being changed in some way to fit modern sensibilities. It's just how it works. I mean, you can't, like, if you don't ever update it, then the books will not be read. And they will die. And that will be sad too.
Yeah, I think anyone who's been subjected to trying to read Canterbury Tales in like Middle English. Yeah, I know. Every English major is like, me, I suffered that trauma. Would agree that sometimes it can be really helpful to update a text to make it more comprehensible for modern readers. So
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Of course we want our books to remain our voice, but the best, you know, the best plans of mice and men oft gang aglay. Oh, that's the original. Oft gang aglay is the original. So it's a good thing that got changed, huh?
Said you wouldn't use your degree, Brian.
Yes, this is first time. There's a first time for everything.
Oh, man.
So, you know, this hot potato wisdom question doesn't really fit anymore. So,
well,
my question...
we can talk more about it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
So, well, Claire, I was just going to ask, I mean, how much change is permitted in a in one of these adaptations, one of these changes for a modern audience? How much change do you feel like is allowed?
Okay, so I think that if you are making changes to a text that's already been published, and it's just little things like typos, fine. I think we have a pretty unanimous agreement that, like, yeah, get those out. That wasn't what was intended. It was just typographical. Who cares? I do think that if you're going to start removing offensive words, which I'm not against creating new versions without those, because that, again, makes it accessible to more people when you mm-hmm. take words out that are offensive to those people. You can take that out. You can change little bits that may be problematic without changing too much of the story. I think if you're going to start doing that, you need to call it an updated edition.
Yeah.
Problem solved. You have the old edition. If people want to go and have that text, I think it's important to keep those records. Because I think that that helps us chart the growth of our society and the evolution of our society. But they don't need to, we don't need to be like putting, you know, really offensive stuff easily accessible to everyone, like all the time, so that, you know, you get assigned a book in high school and you're reading it and it has a slur about someone who looks like you. Like, that person doesn't need to experience that, especially if they're already like a minority in the class. And then, you know, we all know that experience. It's like everyone wants to look at you and it's like, oh, well, what do you think about this? And it's like, I think I wish I hadn't read that. So that sort of thing, just make it a new edition. And you're not erasing history because there will still be those other texts, but you are updating things for, you know, for everyone to be able to enjoy the story and the meaning of it and the themes and have a discussion that doesn't make some people feel like they're discluded from the discourse.
Yeah. Oh, that makes total sense.
All right, Brian. Should books be changed to be more marketable?
Absolutely, you should change books to be more marketable. I did a relaunch of my first ever series, my superhero series, and it sold twice as well the second time around because I learned a lot more. I would be open to even doing it again in a few years, but I'm probably not going to. But just to say that you can, there is nothing wrong with using what you've learned to make your book more marketable. There's this, I don't even know the movie, I think it was on Amazon Prime, of a translation of this author's book actually being kind of a very sexy romance book, but the original was not. And it turns into the author's press tour being very, very strange for him. And I think that's kind of hilarious, but in a way, it's something we should consider. How can we get to our goals? And if that means taking what we thought we wanted in our first original edition and changing it so that more people like it, that is a positive thing.
So, awesome.
Yeah. Well, oh, I hear something notes. In the distance, Claire. It's not sirens. It's not my air conditioning. Actually, I think it is my air conditioning.
Maybe a little bit.
But the Jones.
Crack. Pop.
Crack. Pop.
Snap.
Oh, it's my breakfast is ready. No, it is the lightning round. So, Claire, you had all the hypotheticals. So you're a slow writer with a trilogy planned. Would you save those books up and rapid release them as you finish them, even though they would be Would you save them up and rapid release them or release them as you finish them?
Mm-hmm. So if I wrote rather slow, which I do, mm-hmm. by some standards and not by others. So whatever. Uh-huh. And I was going to just do a trilogy. Would I hold on to them or would and rapid release, or would I do one at a time? And that really depends on a lot of factors. I know, shocker.
Yeah.
My answer is it depends. But what I would consider is how much patience do I have? If I'm a newer writer, I would probably want to get some feedback on the first book before writing the second and third. And that feedback, you could get it from beta readers or alpha readers or whatever, but you might just want to see how it does. You might also, that could give you energy, not just about like, you know, strategically seeing how it does, what you need to adjust, but it could just give you energy to start having some fans. And that is valuable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, rapid release can be a beneficial tactic, but it's also not guaranteed to do much more. So, you know, take that as you may, but it can be nice to sit on three books, especially if it's a trilogy, you know, it's just going to be three books. If you can sit on it without it depleting your energy and without it slowing you to a crawl, that can be really helpful to make sure that it feels like a very complete three-book set, so that you are making sure that you're bringing things in from book one, that you're bringing it into the end of book three for that nice open close loop. As you write book three, you may realize, oh, I wish I had developed some things a little earlier on. And so if you haven't published books one and two, you can go back and you can develop it more, and then you're going to look like a real genius. So there's all kinds of fun, you know, just craft stuff you can do when you sit on the three books. But then again, if you feel like you're going to come to a grinding halt by not publishing until you have all three, then that just is not an option for you.
Yeah. That's tough. But I like that you shared both sides equally as to the pros and cons, Claire. So
I've done both. So
yeah,
it really depends.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Brian. Do you say you're indie published or self-published?
So do I say that I'm indie published or self-published? I tend to say that I'm self-published, mostly for marketing purposes, because people generally don't know what indie published means. And you have to think about that. I remember some authors in my author ad school course, some of them saying, I think this is the name of my genre. And they say this thing that does not exist, that just isn't a genre. And I keep saying, well, that isn't, do you mean this? Do you mean this? They're like, no, it's this. And it's like, well, nobody knows what that means. And so sometimes when you're naming yourself, your own title for yourself, or you're trying to just explain something, think about what other people will understand. Don't think so much about what certain words mean to you. It really matters what these other people hear when you are saying those certain words.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I'm indie self. That's, yeah. Claire, can a part-time author be successful?
Can a part-time author be successful? Yes. Next question. I mean, okay, so let's define some terms, right? What is success? Yeah. What is part-time? Those fluctuate so much person to person. Those terms are basically useless. Financially successful, can someone who doesn't spend 40 hours a week writing and marketing their books be successful financially? Yes, I've seen that. Are they guaranteed to be? No. Could someone who is, you know, writing less than, fewer than 40 hours a week and you know, whatever, be creatively successful? Absolutely. So yep. what are we defining success as, and what are we defining part-time as? But the short answer is yeah. Yeah, you could. And the fastest way to be successful is to define success in a way that is attainable on a daily basis for you.
Love it. Thank you.
Brian.
Yeah.
How important is interior formatting of a book? Is it different for print versus ebook?
I'll talk about formatting here. So formatting is something that I've never really cared about personally. And I went in the early stages of my career before good software was created to solve the problem, I would outsource it. And when good software was created to solve the problem, I just used the software. Sometimes I would even outsource someone using the software so that I didn't even have to deal with it. I don't care that much about the interior formatting. As long as it's not broken and weird looking, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
That is my answer.
Great.
Ha-vum. So, Claire, do you have any ritual or routine that helps you get into the writing groove?
Other than the human sacrifice?
Other than that. We're talking okay. Legal rituals or routines.
I think it's protected under First Amendment rights.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Probably not. No, I don't probably think murder not. Is protected. I've watched a lot of cult documentaries. It's not. Okay, so do I have a ritual or routine? I would say that my ritual / routine for writing is pretty simple. It requires these headphones.
Yep.
I sit at the computer. I get rid of all the other open applications, hide them all, open up my document. Right now I have my document open. I have my series Bible open. I have my beats open. And then I turn on a playlist, and it is the same playlist I've been listening to since 2015. It is my writing playlist. I only listen to it when I'm writing. It's familiar instrumental music, a lot of soundtrack stuff. And it's called Vulture Tower because I was writing a series called Vulture Tower in 2015 that I never published.
Nice.
So yeah, I do that. And then I start my Pomodoros. And I do 25 minutes of working, and then I take my headphones off for the 5-minute break, and then I put them back on for my 25 minutes. And to be honest, that 5-minute break often goes into like 10, 15 minutes because I get up and stretch and I wander off. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I have a job. And I come back to the computer and do that. So that's the routine that has worked for me most consistently, but some days it doesn't work for me. And some days something else works for me better. So yeah, I keep it flexible, keep it fun, unpredictable, baby.
Yeah, love it, love it. But I think that shows, you know, the discipline of I find some things that work most of the time. And so I do them most of the time. You're not jumping around all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's about what works the most of the time.
Yeah.
And I have my little problem solving things now. I have, you know, sometimes I'm like, I can't focus. I literally have an emotion wheel on the wall so I can be like, what feeling do I feel? And then I can be like, oh, that feel. And then I feel it. And then I'm like, okay, right time. You know, like that's kind of how how basic of help I generally need.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Well, all the button chair time pays off.
Yeah. Not for my hip flexors, but in other ways, yes.
Yeah. My massage therapist helps unlock those every couple of weeks. And it's like,
I'm thinking of getting mine removed.
Ooh. I've been saying ooh a lot, but I've actually meant it. So, Claire, we need a question of the week. I was thinking we could go to the top story of the week this week. Should books remain unchanged after they are published?
Oof. Yeah, that's a real, real stirrer. A real you-know-what stirrer of a question.
I love it. Yeah. Broth.
Soup stirrer. Stew stirrer of a question.
Stew stirrer or a stewer. You can answer the stewer of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com. Or at the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. Claire, so for someone who supported your Kickstarter, they read some of your fiction, they read some of Alice Luck, what do you think they should go check out next?
After Alice Luck?
Yeah.
Therapist.
Who?
Let's see. If you like Alice Luck, you will probably also like Jessica Christ, and you'll probably also like the Killhaven Police series, which is a kind of adventurous series, I guess.
Very nice. Very nice. Awesome. Well, you got any final things you want to share with the audience?
Liberatedwriter.com, y'all. Well, go sign up.
Do it. Awesome. And I got fun stuff coming up. My ad profit challenge will not be that far away. That'll start October 11th. AuthorsAdvertise.com. And we're raising the prices of author ad school in 2024. So if you want to get in, well, the getting's good, then you might want to consider it during this upcoming challenge. So be ready. Be ready. So Rocket's here hanging out. Rocket, still kicking, listening to the podcast every so often.
Was Rocket the one that told you to do a podcast?
That's the advice that I always follow my cat's advice, for sure, uh-huh. For sure. But thanks for listening to the show this week. For Claire, I'm Brian. Have a great week of bookselling, everybody. And we will be back next week for episode 494. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.